May call your next witness.
Thank you, Your Honor. We'd like to call as our next witness, Mr. Michael Dirkelow, Jr. Could you please state for us your name?
Good morning, everybody. My name is Standing Grizzly Bear. That's my given name. My English name or my Siyapi name is Mike Dirgelow, Michael Dirgelow, Jr. You can call me Mike. That's fine.
Thank you. Where do you live?
I live on the Flathead Indian Reservation in Northwest Montana between Ronan, Montana and St. Ignatius, Montana, right smack dab in the middle of God's country.
So does this demonstrative exhibit give those of us that aren't familiar with where the Flathead Reservation is located an idea of where that is in terms of the present state of Montana?
Pardon me?
Is this?
Yes, that's the Flathead Indian Reservation.
And is that you in this photo?
That is me. Yes, that is up on Three Lakes Peak. And that is my Idlawia. I named that tree. Idlawia in my language means my great-great-grandparent. That's a white bark pine.
And so just to confirm for the record, you are a enrolled member of the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes?
Yes, I am.
Have you been asked by the plaintiff to testify in this case on certain topics?
Yes, I have.
And using this exhibit as it's useful to you, might you just summarize before we begin what topics you've been asked to testify on?
Can I put this up? You can see it better?
It's all right.
Oh, gotta be tough. There you go. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. Referring to that slide as helpful, what topics have you been asked to address?
I've been asked to talk about how climate change has threatened our culture, our resources, our spiritual values, as tribal members and basically everybody that lives, on a reservation, off the reservation in Montana and the country, how climate change has, affected our natural environment. With respect to all of creation, and part of our belief is that the creation is central and a major part of our spiritual values and our cultural life ways. And we have tribal members for millennia, for thousands of years, have gained subsistence from the hunting and the fishing, gathering of our food sources, our medicines, and that type of thing around the area on the reservation, both on and off.
Okay, thank you. I'll talk next about your qualifications to discuss these topics. And in that regard, Your Honor, as a matter of housekeeping, Mr. Dirklow's CV is P. 154. The climate change strategic plan for the Salish and Kootenai tribes that we'll be discussing is P30, and the tribal council resolution adopting the climate change strategic plan is exhibit P56, and I would move these three exhibits into evidence, and if I understand correctly, they're not objected to.
No objection.
P-154, P-30, and P-56.
P-156, Your Honor.
Oh, 156. All right, got it. Thank you.
Your CV has been admitted into evidence, Mike, and if you could just, and we've kind of summarized those for the benefit of the court in this slide, could you just share with us a summary of your education and just selected professional experience?
Sure. So one thing that I've got on here is I'll have worked for the tribe for 40 years this August in many different capacities, including the head of the Tribal Historic Preservation Department. For several years, I worked as the environmental director in the Natural Resource Department. I received my bachelor's in environmental science from Xavier Scrutiny College, involved in probably more institution than I would care to admit to, but when I look at my schedule, if you look at my schedule, it's crazy. So one of those is the Institute for Tribal Environmental Professionals. We work throughout the country on helping tribes develop climate adaptation plans. And I've taught and did presentations at workshops throughout North America, both in the United States and in Canada.
Could you help Mike get the mic a little closer?
Mike.
Okay. Okay. So, could you explain to us how the Climate Change Advisory Committee of the Salish and Kootenai tribes came about?
Sure. So back in 2000, around 2011, my supervisor and my supervisor's supervisor called me into their office, and I was like, oh shit. Oh, I thought I was in trouble. Anyway, I'm sorry. I won't say that anymore. Shoot. Called me in the office and said, Mike, we want you to coordinate the effort of developing a climate plan. At the time, we was calling them adaptation plans for the tribe. And really, I didn't know, because I hadn't done it before, how to go about doing that, right? So they wanted me to coordinate that effort. I ended up going to a workshop that ITEP puts on, the Institute for Tribal Environmental Professionals. I think it was in Wisconsin, the first one, that I went to. And that helped me to develop, they call it a vulnerability assessment. And that's all on like Excel spreadsheets and that. So by the time I left Wisconsin to the time I got home, I filled out almost that whole spreadsheet. So I was excited about, developing this plan and really, hoping to make a difference in what we was doing back home, because we were seeing the effects of climate change, from different things. But when I thought about what I did was went to the different programs in the different departments within a tribal organization and picked out what I call sector leads. So if you look at our plan, it's on cfktclimate.org. You'll see that we have 9 sectors in the plan. There's air, there's water, there's wildlife, there's fisheries, I can't remember all, forestry, can't remember all 9, but each one of those, I picked out, a representative from those programs to sit on the advisory committee. And those are the folks that helped me develop the plan. So we were one of the first tribes in the United States to do such a thing. We were one of the first tribes to develop a climate strategy. I think the Swinomish tribe was the first. And then the Nez Perce, we're working on those when we started ours.
Did you also invite outside experts such as Dr. Lori Byron to participate in the formulation of your strategic climate plan?
Absolutely. I have to surround myself with smart people. with people that really understand the difference. So Dr. Byron, they work on the kids, the pediatrics. And so if you look at my list of climate on the climate change advisory committee now, there's close to 100 people. And the reason I do that, and if you're interested in joining the climate change advisory committee, you will be a member for life. There's no fees, but you will be requested to contribute. That's what, you know, people and even, you know, people that just live and around and on a reservation, off the reservation, if you're interested in joining us, it's open. But I try to bring in just so that we can communicate, we can collaborate, and help each other out in doing the work that we're doing.
Why did you undertake this task?
Cause my boss told me to at the time. It's like, but you know, honestly, I was at the time, I was the chairman of the Regional Tribal Operations Committee, RTOC, which is Region 8 tribes under EPA. All the tribes that receive funding under EPA, we meet. So there's Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, Utah, North and South Dakota, 27 tribes in Region 8. I was the chairman of that committee, and I was also the co-chair on a National Tribal Science Council. And one of the things, the exercises that EPA asked us to do at the time was come up with our priorities. And if you can imagine, you know, the priorities that the Crow tribe has, you heard Shane, and the different priorities that the Dakotas, Standing Rock, the Sioux tribes are way different than our priorities. So it was a difficult task that they gave us, but, and then, you know, that took a year or so, and then they turn around and say, well, what are your top three? And I was like, what? We worked so hard to identify. So we had like 25 that we had identified, and then EPA comes and says, what is your top three? And two of those was, one of them is climate change, and one of them is TEK. Traditional ecological knowledge. So we use Western science and traditional knowledge to help us do a better job at really identifying actions that we can take to help with climate change.
Thank you. Before we delve into some of that you just briefly discussed in a little more detail, I'd like to direct your attention to the next PowerPoint slide and explain to us, if you would, some of the selected professional highlights and experiences from your CV.
This is one?
Yeah.
Sorry. So I'm part of the Steering and Planning Committee for the National Adaptation Forum. That happens on an annual basis around the United States. I'm part of that committee. I'm on the Steering and Planning Committee for the National Tribal and Indigenous Climate Summit. That happens every 2 years. The next one will be in Anchorage in 2024. My brother and I actually came up with the Eagles program as part of our work with the within the reservation, and Eagles is Environmental Advocates for Global and Local Ecological Sustainability. That's just something, you know, one evening him and I, his name is Jim, we're sitting around the fire talking about our work with climate change. And I said, how can we get the kids more involved in what we're doing? So him and I came up with this, and we had some ideas. And I put in for funding through BIA. I got some funding. So I just went around the schools and we came up with the brochure. I don't know if that's going to be on there, but I can talk about that one.
Okay.
I was, like I shared earlier, I was the co-chair on the National Tribal Science Council and the chairman of the Region 8 Tribal Operations Committee.
Mike, have you done any teaching about climate change?
I have done presentations. I haven't kept track of every place that I've done, but I just got a hat and a bottle of maple syrup and a t-shirt from Yale School of Forestry. So that was cool. So I did a presentation for Yale. I've done a couple presentations for Cornell University. I'm scheduled to go to the University of Arkansas next month and the Haskell Indian College in Kansas. Sorry, thanks. So I've done and also Montana. So I've done presentations for the University of Montana, Montana State University. So I'm a Grizz fan, but I'll do it if they ask me. And San Luis Cuny College too.
So we'll kind of circle back to the Eagles program now. And thank you, Susan. So in regards to your work with tribal youth and having them get involved in a lot of these issues that are dear to your heart, could you kind of explain, you explained how you founded that program with your brother, Jim. I think it was back in 2015.
Yes.
And explain what was your impetus? What were you trying to do in terms of your concern for tribal youth?
Sure. How much time do we have? When we came up with the Eagles program, we wanted to get the youth more involved because the whole development of our strategy was basically internal. All of the sector leads that I identified, everybody that I brought to the table were part of the tribal organization plus others like Dr. Byron and several other people that helped us develop our strategy. So that was we started in September of 2012, finished in 2013, and we came up with the Eagle idea in 2015. And what I wanted to do was basically have all of the school kids, and I wanted it to be K through 12 and beyond, not just high school, not just middle school. I put in for some funding through BIA, and I got a youth initiative grant. So what I did was came up and developed this brochure, this pamphlet with some ideas that we had. So recycling, if you look at the little diagram down on the bottom of that page, I have a garden. So community gardens were part of that plan. I have a TV that we could meet in and we can tell stories. I have a Camas baking pit. Part of that whole thing was preserving and processing of foods. So a rack of dry meat. But when I brought this to the schools, what I did, I let them know I was coming, but I bring like 10 pizzas. And if you walk down the hallway in a school carrying 10 pizzas, you're going to have all kinds of kids behind you. They know. So that's what I did. I went to the schools and I basically said, here's the idea that I have, but I want this to be yours. I really want this to be yours. So in each school, we had Eagles program going, and actually so if you guys are familiar with reservations, what do they do? What do we do when you do something great? You name a road after you. They name a housing complex after you. They name a meeting room after you. I said, I don't want, if I do something great, I don't want that. I want this to be my legacy. I want Eagles to be my legacy. I want my grandkids and my great grandkids to say, my papa did this when I'm gone and I'm no longer here. I want this to be something that carries on. And eventually I would really like, and I'm working on this, to have a regional Eagle Summit and a national Eagle Summit and even international Eagle Summit. Because at one point, the kids in Ronan were Skyping with Sami kids, and also in New Zealand. There was talking with kids in New Zealand. So hopefully someday we'll be doing some student exchanges with some of the folks in New Zealand.
Mike, I understand that as an example closer to home of the work that you've done with the Eagles program with tribal youth, you've worked to install a series of air quality monitors on the reservation. Can you tell us about that?
So earlier you heard Shane talk about what's the mountain range there? When he can't see the mountains, basically that means we should not go outside. The same thing happened. I had a gathering. I call them not a conference, but I call mine my meeting gatherings. Dr. Byron came to that gathering and heard me speak about my concern for my grandson, who was in high school. He was a senior in high school, and at the time they were doing doubles football. Football practice was going on, and as I drove from St. Ignatius to where my office was in Ronan, if I can't see the mountains, that's not a good day to be outside. And my concern was those boys are out there practicing football right now. I'm really concerned about that, and I can't see the mountains. And Lori, thank goodness, heard me, and I don't know if it was – it was not very long after that. She called me up and said, Mike, would you be interested in some purple air monitors? And I said, absolutely. So as the environmental director, I knew at the time that our air quality program, we actually have three monitors, air quality monitors on the reservation, and none of those were up and running for quite some time. So I jumped on the opportunity to get those purple air monitors, which are fairly inexpensive and easy to install. And once you do it, once you put one up, you become part of a network. So we got seven, and I went around to the schools and worked with the Eagles kids to install those air quality monitors at the schools. And they all, well, not all of them, but some of them come, you can get what's called a flag program. So if the air is really bad, you put up the red flag. If it's good, you have a green flag. So the kids are doing that. We have another grant, a NOAA-NIDAS grant that we just got that we're going to put 20 more monitors up. And my goal is to develop a network of youth. So the kids in Spokane and Colvilles and Coeur d'Alene will be Skyping or whatever social media with the kids on my reservation, saying, hey, here's what's coming your way. Mm-hmm. And then our kids will be communicating with kids from Crow, from, Fort Belknap, Fort Peck, and those other kids, letting them know. So I'm kind of like, want to develop
an early warning system,
but a group of little young meteorologists. I don't know what else to call them.
Before we get into the meat of your climate action, the tribal climate plan, could you just, I put on the slide just a couple of awards that you've received in recent years, not among others. What are those?
So, just so you know, the work I do, I don't do for awards or prestige. It's not, but these are two awards that I did get for the work I've done, throughout the country. The first award, was the White House Champion for Change, in Climate Equity Award. That was in 2016, under the Obama administration. And then the second award was part of the National Adaptation Forum, and that's Climate Adaptation Leadership Award for Natural Resources.
Mike, I'd like to direct our attention now to the Tribal Climate Change Strategic Plan, which has been entered into evidence as Exhibit P30. Just to get us started here, what are we looking at?
So the one on the left, the 2013 plan that was updated in 2016 was the first plan that we put together. The one on the right is the current plan. We call it our new plan. And I am this close to having that published. And again, if you're interested in looking at what we're doing, that plan is available. Well, both of these are. On our website, cskkclimate.org.
Could you, are we fair in understanding that the tribe's climate change planning process is ongoing as you get more information?
Absolutely. And back in 2013, my brother was the chairman of the tribe. So I basically told Joe, my brother Joe, if you don't do this, I'm telling mom. that's how you get it done. But this, both plans, are a work in progress. And at the time, I also told him that I don't want to do this if it's going to sit on somebody's shelf and collect dust. It has to be a living document. In fact, probably after 2016, all of the models and the scientific models and projections that we looked at in 2012 and 2013 that we're projecting to happen in 2050, 2060, were already happening. So that's why we started working on our new plan to start addressing some of those impacts of really some extreme weather events that we're seeing on the reservation.
I'd like to just direct your attention to the next slide, which is from the introduction of the initial plan. And if you would read to us from the introduction, I'd appreciate it.
So there's overwhelming scientific evidence demonstrates that human inputs of greenhouse gases are almost certain to cause continued warming of the planet. Locally, all models predict warmer temperatures, lower snowpack, and more frequent and severe droughts and floods. The Confederate States and Kuni tribes acknowledge these changes and its potential impacts on the Flathead Reservation in Montana.
So is this kind of a quick summary of what you were trying to address and continue to try to address through this plan?
Yes, it is.
Okay. The next image on the screen I'd like to direct your attention to, and would you explain to what we're looking at now?
That's my dad.
And in terms of the process, could you explain, you mentioned before that there was both a more or less traditional scientific approach to how the tribes approached responding to climate change, and there was also a traditional approach. Could you explain both of those?
So, I'm sorry, I get a little choked up. My dad passed away in 2015. And he was really a support for me in this whole process. He really came to almost all of my meetings, almost all of my workshops. And some of the most specialist, is that a right word, specialist, times or part of the whole process of developing that strategy was interviewing the elders, interviewing my dad, and there was 8 elders that I interviewed in that process. And, you know, that was That was pretty special. Now, today there's only one of those elders left. So that knowledge that they carry, basically goes with them. In an effort to preserve some of that knowledge, we do interviews. So that knowledge and those interviews, are part of that planning process. And the significance and the importance of our foods, our medicines, one of the things Dad said was that someday we might have to go to greenhouses to get our medicines and our foods. He was talking about some of the plants that we collect in high mountain areas where, because of the early snow runoff, some of the streams up in those high mountain elevations are drying up a lot sooner. So those medicines that we gather are not available in those places.
And so the effort to develop the tribal plan was, foundationed on the stories of the elders.
Yes.
I'd like to, direct your attention to the, next, image, which is also an image from the, strategic plan. And, you indicated that there was in the introduction and otherwise that respect for all of creation, is a central and integral part of the, tribal approach. Could you explain in terms of reference, for instance, to the river honoring, what that involves?
I don't remember exactly when we started the river honoring, but it came about, because we wanted to share, information, about what we were doing as a tribal organization, within natural resources and other programs. So each one of those teepees that you see set up there are a station. So each station represents like air quality, water quality. The first station that the kids go to is the elders. So on the blue loop, we have the women elders. On the red loop, we have the men elders. And there's like 10 stations or more on each loop. And what we do, we invite all the kids. So this year in May, we had, I think there was like 475 kids on Tuesday and about the same number on Wednesday. So almost 1,000 kids come to the river, and learn about, the significance and the importance of our water quality, of our culture and our traditions, and also what's happened over the years is we have people like backcountry horsemen and other kind of organizations who join us down at the river for these two special days, and it's time to honor the river.
And is that part of the traditional values that have been handed down by the elders to you and now to the children?
Well, the river honoring itself is not a cultural event, so to speak, but we do share cultural information and traditional knowledge with all the kids at this, place.
In terms of your experience, along and near the river, have you hunted and fished and gathered there throughout your life?
All my life. Just across the river from this location, my great grandparents had their original allotment and they raised horses. So all of my life I spent down along the river. I'm Kalispell, or I think Lewis and Clark called us Ponderay, the Earring people. And that was our original homelands right in that area. So we're really fortunate in that we were not displaced. So my ancestors are buried there. That's where we spent most of our summer, down along the river, camping, fishing, hunting, and gathering.
Which river? What's the name?
Flathead River.
Okay. And have you noticed any changes in river flow over the course of your life?
There's been a lot of changes, both from the different runoff, the snow melt in the spring, and also from human-caused changes in river water quality and how we live. And then, of course, the dam, what used to be called Kerr Dam is now SKQ Dam. It's Kalispell Kootenai Dam. So we took over operation and ownership of that dam. So back in the day, long time ago, when I was in high school, I was I worked as a wildlife technician, and we did the Canada goose study down in the lower part of the river, looking at different stream flows and effects of how they operated the dam. So now they operate the dam more in a natural type of a setting. So in the springtime, we get higher flows because of runoff, and in some late summer, they're lower.
Like, how long have your tribe's cultural traditions been carried on?
Forever, as long as we can remember, or time immemorial.
You have explained earlier in your testimony your work with tribal youth, and you've also explained how you've realized the value and worked at some length with tribal elders, interviewing a number of them to formulate the tribe's climate plan. Would it be possible for you to share with us how spiritual and cultural values are passed onto tribal youth through the teaching of tribal elders?
So for us, and I think a lot of other tribes, there's oral tradition, and a lot of those oral traditions are passed down in story. We tell coyote stories in the wintertime. We can't tell them this. They have to be snow on the ground. So a lot of those stories were teaching stories. And also, just like Shane shared earlier, it's really, life experiences that we spend, go out and we gather our medicines, and that's how you learn. You learn from the elders, which ones to use, which ones to pick, and when to pick them, or when to gather them. So all that knowledge is passed down from generation to generation. And really it's my responsibility to pass it down to my children and my grandchildren.
Do those stories and experiences out on the landscape also find their way into the names of the places, such as streams, creeks, and even rivers?
It absolutely has. My dad, when he was with us, worked a lot on place name and maps, historic maps of even around Helena. So there's rivers and there's gulches and there's streams that have place names that our ancestors gave those names. One of them is like the place of the little bull trout. And then there's another one that's called the place of a big bull trout. So all of those places, my dad actually, he was an ethnographer, and some of those old trails and campsites and that are preserved in those maps.
What happens in terms of the tradition, the tribal tradition, when bull trout no longer inhabit the streams that were named Little Bull Trout and Bull Trout?
Right, and what happens to Glacier National Park when there's no glaciers? Kind of the same thing. That's what my dad and some of the elders talked about then too, is that if there's no longer bull trout in that stream, does it still carry that name? Or then we say that's where the big bull trout used to be, but they're no longer there? Or that's where the little bull trout used to be and they're no longer there? Or that's where the glaciers used to be? that's one of the things that they talked about, as far as, you know, the places that we name, if it's no longer there, then does it keep the name?
How do the effects of climate change harm tribal subsistence practices, cultural traditions, and these spiritual values that we've been discussing?
So over the years, and I think Shane talked about this too with chokecherries, we've seen a change in the a lot of tribes call them seasonal rounds. So there's a time, like when the elk start bugling, it's that's the time when we start, when we go up in the high mountains and collect, what Sariel called bear root. The name for that we have is husks. So there's a time to go do that. And as the climate has changed, over the years, some of those times have changed dramatically. It's no longer, we can't go up and you know, we're waiting for the elk to start bugling, or we're waiting for the robins to show up, or the geese to start flying, or these types of things that tell us now is the time. It's shifted. And, part of what I heard mentioned earlier is that there's a physical and a mental impact, but there's also a spiritual impact, because all of those things, all of those relatives that are out there, that the non-human relatives that we rely on to feed us, to mend us as medicines, they all have a spiritual significance that go along with that.
Mike, I see in this illustration from the tribal climate plan that in the center of this image, which is entitled Lifeways, there's a braided image here. Is, can you share with us what would be the significance of that braid in the, towards the center of the circle?
Well, can I show you the significance of the model? This is a Lifeways model that Please. I came up with. It's, so this is actually, it came from what I call my awake vision. Working on the new plan, I woke up one morning about 3 a.m. and I couldn't go back to sleep. And this image, was in my mind. I seen a pika. If you guys are familiar with pikas, they're those little cute little rodents that live at the top of the mountain. I seen a pika at the top of the mountain behind my house, and that pika died. It was the last pika, and it died. And there was a deer in the meadow behind my house. When that pika died, the deer lifted her head, because she knew that at that time something just happened. Something in the sacred circle of life just changed. She didn't know what it was. She didn't know that, oh, that was the last pika. She didn't know that, but she did know that something changed. And the braided sweet grass here in this whole Lifeways model in a circle represents that connection that we have. And we, you know, I put the human being in the center, but we're not in the center. We're part of the circle, and we need to put ourselves back into that circle. We're not above it and we're not below it. We're part of it. So every time something happens within the sacred circle of life, it impacts all of us. It impacts all of life. So that's where this Lifeways model came from, and it represents connection and connectivity. And each one of those represents the sector in the plan.
We'll direct your attention next to the next image in the plan on climate resilience. And if you could kind of explain what you had in mind in terms of this image.
So these are our words for the seasons. Well, each season has a special part, but these are the impacts that we're seeing that are impacting that sacred circle of life. So increased winds. I don't know if you guys seen this, but I think it was the week before last, we had a tornado right by my house in the Mission Valley. I've never seen a tornado in the Mission Valley in my life. I've seen water spouts on Flathead Lake, but I think this is the first time I've ever seen it. Wasn't a huge one, but enough to tear up somebody's shed. A she shed. I don't know if it was a she shed, but anyway, tore up their shed. So increasing wildfires. We heard, Shane talk about that. I mean, 2 years ago we had Boulder Fire and that's not all just climate related. It's 100 years of fire suppression that we as human beings have caused. So it all adds up. I mean, it all contributes to all of those dead trees that you see on top of the mountain. I don't know if you have another slide that represents the white bark pine, and you see me with my Alawi up there. So a lot of the work that we've done is around white bark pine. And people, how many of you have been driven through the Mission Valley? It's beautiful, right? And people in my valley, in my home, have a hard time believing or even understanding that climate change is going on. And what I say, and there's a little video that I put together, and I say, you know, I live in God's country. It's beautiful. And people have a hard time seeing the impact of climate change. And we as human beings have a hard time, unless we're directly impacted, we have a hard time, you know, acknowledging that. But I tell them, look at the top of the mountains. You see all those dead trees up there? That's a result of climate change. And that's why part of the reason why we're seeing more intense and bigger and more frequent wildfires happening because of all those dead trees.
And you've kind of
plus drought
walked us around the circle of the year in terms of the various impacts. It looks like wildfires and floods, drought, and also mentioned wind. Those are various kinds of impacts that you're seeing on the reservation.
They are, yes.
I'd like to direct your attention to the next image. It's a takeout from what's been admitted as Plaintiff's Exhibit 156. And if I understand that the plan, the tribal plan has been adopted, the updated tribal plan has been adopted once again. Could you read for us, if you would, the takeout there so we kind of come full circle with your efforts over the last 10 years or so?
Is it okay if I talk about this a little bit before I do that?
Yes.
Okay. So I've been working on climate change along with the rest of my work for a lot of years. And I jokingly say sometimes that when people see Mike Dirtolo coming down the hall, they slam their door and they lock it and they pull the shade down because they know I'm going to ask them to do more. I'm going to ask you to include climate change in your whole work plan because it impacts all of us. So you're already working full time. You're already putting your 2,080 hours in, and I'm going to ask you to do more, right? So finally, after 12 years, the tribal council passed this resolution. And what I asked them was that I don't care if you put climate change in your work plan at 0.005 FTEs. You need to address climate change and all that we do. So this is a result that the tribal council has passed and is part of our plan now. And really it's, it holds people accountable and responsible in all the programs. So I'll just read it. It says, whereas the tribal council has determined that impacts from climate change are occurring on the Flathead Reservation, that climate change presents immediate and long-term risks to the health, security, and general welfare of the tribes and its members, and to our land and non-human relatives, and that the effects of climate change have a potential to negatively impact our people, our lands, our relatives, the environment, the economy, culture, and social welfare of the tribal community and its resources.
Thank you. How does it make you feel to have achieved this effort through the tribe with their development, your development, and their adoption of this climate plan and your work with tribal youth over these years?
It gives me hope. I don't know if you guys know Chief Dan George. He said, "It makes my heart soar like a hawk." But it does. It gives me hope in that, you know, and sometimes it takes years for what I call, I kind of feel, look at myself as a seed planter. I plant seeds, and that those seeds hopefully grow into something beautiful. When I'm, I shared maybe, when I'm not here, my grandkids and my great grandkids will say my papa did that. So it's like that beautiful tree that grows and they, and stuff like this. And I shared this earlier. I don't do this for me. I do because I want to see a beautiful place too. I remember the time when I could go fishing down on Mission Creek and drink right out of the creek. That doesn't happen anymore. So, yeah.
Mike, are you aware that, Sariel, and also an enrolled member of the Salish and Kootenai tribes is, one of the youth plaintiffs, in this case?
I am, yes.
Michael, do you see any similarities in what the youth plaintiffs are attempting to accomplish in this lawsuit and what you have been attempting to accomplish for many years in your work?
Absolutely. I think it's absolutely necessary for our survival that we take action now. We can't leave it to them. We've basically been irresponsible in a way. I mean, I drive a car. I have a car. I didn't get here on horseback, would have took me a week, but we have to change our ways, you know. One of the things, and I know I'm going over really quick, I was invited to speak at the University of Florida. I went and I did my presentation and I fly home and it's like I presented for 20 minutes. I fly clear to Florida, clear across the United States from Montana to Florida to speak about climate change for 20 minutes. How much sense does that make? I won't do that no more. And just like I shared earlier, you know, when we had our Earth Day event, I don't know if I shared this already, but we had an Earth Day event. And at the end of the event, I said, okay, I want all the over 40s on this side of the gym, all of the under 40s on this side of the gym. And we met in the middle. And I said, I promise you, I make a pledge to you that I will do a better job at trying to reduce my carbon footprint by driving less, by making less trips to the store. I'll be honest, my grand dogs love going to the store. And we like to go to town and we like to go, you know, go for rides, but it's like, we just need to live a more responsible life in how we do. You remember a long time ago, one of the things that I'm trying to do too is call my neighbors. Say, hey, Art, I'm heading to the town. I'm going to go, you know, get milk or groceries or whatever. Do you need anything? Let's do that. We don't do that. Sometimes we don't even talk to our neighbors. We live next door to them for 50 years and we haven't talked to them.
Thank you. Your Honor, before I close here with Mr. Durglow, I would like to tender him as an expert in the topics that he has discussed, including how climate change threatens the traditions culture and spiritual value of members of the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes, and in particular, tribal youth.
Well, he certainly set forth his experience and background in that. So, yes.
Thank you. You can stay there for briefly.
Oh. Yeah, you might ask some questions. Cross.
Just so you know, I charge $20 for question, $50 for answers.
Good morning, Mr. Durgo. Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
Just a couple of short questions. Would you agree with me that your tribes are sovereign nations?
Yes.
Would you agree with me that the state of Montana doesn't have control over the tribes?
Yeah. Yes.
And would that include the agreement that the state of Montana doesn't control permitting of activities on tribal land?
I don't know for sure if that's totally true. I'm going to say that we have our own recreation permits and use permits, but I don't know that Montana Department of Environmental Quality might have to issue some permits as far as discharge.
Aside from what you just mentioned?
No, not right off.
No further questions. No further questions, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, sir. Let me cut down.
Thank you very much.